At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hacking. It is a game for young people, but for hospitals and healthcare, I learned in June of this year, it is dangerous, perilous, threatening, life-causing business. Several London hospitals under significant strain more than a week after a cyber attack crippled services. This is the New York Times mid-June this year. They have asked medical students to volunteer to help minimize disruption, as thousands of blood samples have had to be discarded and hundreds of operations postponed. The ransomware attack goes on, the Times reporting on London. On Synovus, a private firm that analyzes blood tests, has crippled services at two major National Health Service hospital trusts, Guy's and St. Thomas's and King's College, which describe the situation as critical. In other words, an attack on one piece of the system quickly becomes an attack on the whole system, and everything backs up. But that's the National Health System of London. That doesn't come to America. We have a private health care here, except I welcome Annie Fixler, the director of the Center on Cyber and Technology Innovation at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. And she's writing in the Washington Times with her colleague Vincent Wang, an intern. And we're looking at hacking in American hospitals and what is to be done. Annie, rather than examine the ruins, and that's what happened to the NHS in London at some point in June, we'll look at what exists now. What is the threat? We better do some definitions. What is ransomware, Annie? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having me. So ransomware is a kind of cyber attack. There are lots of different bad things that hackers can do. One of the most prevalent kinds of hacking that's going on right now is what's called ransomware, where an attacker encrypts, like sort of jumbles up all of your data, and then holds it at ransom, forces you to pay, and then they'll give it back to you. They'll decrypt it. And that has been a kind of attack that's been ransacking the healthcare sector because hospitals and healthcare providers need access to their data so that they can make good medical decisions. And so hackers are ruthless, and they know this. And so they have been encrypting data and forcing doctors to pay to get their data back. And it's been a terrible situation for the past number of years, actually.
There's a major vulnerability, if I understand it. And it's not necessarily a private firm. It's not necessarily a great big fancy hospital with lots of rich people. It's the rural hospitals. How so, Annie?
Sure. So you were talking about, you know, the London hospital system and its interconnectivity, and that the interconnectivity of lots of different systems are the occur here in the United States as well. Rural hospitals are one piece of a larger puzzle. What is unique about them and what is particularly challenging from a cybersecurity perspective is that many of these rural hospitals are very small, have very limited staff, have very limited budgets, and so they may not have robust cybersecurity controls in place because they don't have knowledgeable staff, because they are focused on having doctors and nurses and the personnel they need to take care of patients, and they don't have access money to spend on cybersecurity staff. And so they're leaving themselves vulnerable.
Yes, and you have recommendations. In other words, we see the problem. It happened to London. If it can happen to London, it can happen anywhere. And probably does, because ransomware is not something you advertise or boast about afterwards. You tend to be very quiet about it. I understand it's routine. It's seen as criminal activity, but there's no certainty that it's not attached to state actors. No certainty whatsoever, given that some of the adversaries out there are happy to see the U.S. undermined by civic failure. So we go to recommendations that Annie and her colleague are publishing. First, cybersecurity professionals. Have you got some, Annie? I can find work for them tonight. Where are they?
Nationally, there is a huge shortage of cybersecurity personnel. It is a giant workforce problem that both the private sector and the U.S. government are focused on. And that's great. We need to train a lot more young people and to get them into this field. And there are lots of initiatives going on to get them trained and to get more people interested in cybersecurity. That's great. And that is going to address the broader workforce problem. For rural hospitals themselves, there is also a budget problem, right? They can't afford to hire these people, even if those people existed. We have been looking at the use of what are called virtual CISOs or fractional CISOs, chief information security officers. So what if you didn't have to buy a whole person and have a full-time staff member? What if you could split the costs of a cybersecurity expert between a couple hospitals or between a couple organizations as a way to get cybersecurity expertise to those who need it, but otherwise can't afford it? So there's lots of different kinds of solutions, but that is one that we have been particularly exploring to get the cybersecurity expertise to the people who need it most, but can't afford it.
And Congress, has it responded to what it's such a good idea?
Not yet on that particular idea, I would say. Congress has been focused on solutions, but I think Congress and the administration have been focused on solutions that sort of lie within the stuff they know and the stuff they're good at. So they know about making guidelines and they know about issuing standards. And so that's where they're focused. We're trying to come up with, we at the Foundation for Defensive Democracies are trying to also think about, are there innovative solutions that can be driven from the bottom up or that can have some congressional backing or administration backing, but may not be the tools that the federal government is most comfortable with, but the tool that might best fix the problem.
And this is a global problem, right? It's not just London or rural hospitals in America. And yet the networking that is dreamed about right now, you know, everything's about artificial intelligence. That's going to be more connectivity, not less, correct? So your defenses are even going to be more vulnerable in future from anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, this is a get it right now because it's just going to get worse in the future kind of situation. You're absolutely right. Artificial intelligence, emerging technologies, quantum computing, all of this is an over the horizon threat generally, but that horizon is rapidly approaching. So let's try to fix it now and get it right now and get the people and the technologies we need in place now.
I've heard an urban legend and I want to take an opportunity to pop it. Urban legend says even the equipment in the hospital can be hacked. Is that true? Can you hack in through that kind of equipment?
I'm sorry to say yes. There have been tests done about can a hacker get into an insulin pump, for example, and either give false readings for that pump or send bad data or actually cause it to malfunction. And the truth is yes. And it's very dangerous. It's very disconcerting. The Food and Drug Administration has been focused on this issue for medical device cybersecurity. They've actually been leading the charge on some components of that. And that is important and good. That doesn't address the broader ecosystem of hospitals and healthcare providers. But hopefully we're moving in the right direction when it comes to actually securing the devices that are directly interacting with patients and that may be put into patients, things like pacemakers and all of that. So it is a dangerous environment we're operating in. Luckily, there are some folks looking in the right direction.
Final urban legend. Are hospitals and states setting aside money for ransomware? I've heard that.
They might be. I don't know for a fact. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them are. Some of them, hopefully, are looking more towards things like cyber insurance.
Sure.
And, you know, ways to offset risk that way rather than just keeping a pot of money knowing they're going to have to pay a ransom. Please spend that money proactively on cyber defense rather than just hoarding it knowing you're going to have to pay an attacker later. But people make bad decisions with cybersecurity all the time.
Right. People are waiting for an operation. You're not going to pause and say, well, let's see dollars and cents. Annie Fixler, Director of the Center on Cyber and Technology Innovation, Foundation for Defensive Democracies. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,